The Fresno State Bulldogs open their season tonight at 7, but you can hear one of the oldest living Bulldog football players today at 1 on Hometown Heroes. 70 years ago, he shipped out with the Merchant Marines, leaving his pregnant wife back home in the States.
She was a brave one. She didn't know whether I'd be back or not.
He made it home, and they recently celebrated their 71st anniversary. Catch the rest of the story today at 1 on News Talk 580 or 5 p.m. on FM 105.9. Brought to you by Humana, proud to honor our hometown heroes.
As Americans, we enjoy many freedoms. Among them are the freedom to vote, to worship, and to speak our mind. These freedoms have long been protected by the men and women of our armed forces and their families that supported them. For more than 15 years, Humana has made a commitment to our veteran community. That commitment continues today with the introduction of the Humana Preventive Plus package for veterans and their families. In developing this product, we listened to more than 10,000 veterans. With their input and our 50 years of expertise in the healthcare industry, we developed an affordable dental plan that also includes discounts on vision, hearing, retail prescription drugs, and more. We are proud to offer this plan to our veterans and their families right here in Fresno and throughout the country. We are also proud to announce that Humana is now the 2012 exclusive healthcare partner for the MVETS. Find out more about the Humana Preventive Plus package for veterans. Call our Fresno office, 559-221-2522, 559-221-2522.
News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom.
Hometown Heroes is brought to you by Humana. Humana is proud to honor our hometown heroes.
Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes with you every Saturday here on KMJ, whether you're listening to us on 580 AM at 1 o'clock, on the FM side at 105.9 each Saturday at 5, or maybe online at kmjnow.com. Hopefully you have gotten to know the mission of this program. We want to honor our World War II veterans for their service, for their sacrifice. We want their stories to be preserved so they're not forgotten, and we have a lot to learn along the way. And today it's not just going to be World War II history. A little Fresno State football history as well. As you know, tonight at 7 o'clock, the Bulldogs open the season against Weber State. Our pregame coverage on KMJ starts at 5 o'clock with Bulldogs Live. And our guest today here on Hometown Heroes is one of the oldest living Bulldog football players. Desmond Hornbuckle joins me from Southern California. He's originally from Kalinga, played for the Bulldogs in the late 1930s. How you doing today? Now, how old are you now?
I'm 95.
95 years old. So you grew up in Kalinga, I understand.
No, really, Pasadena. I played high school football in Pasadena and graduated there, but I never made a letter in football. So when I graduated from Pasadena, my folks moved back to Kalinga, because they wanted to take over the bakery. So I went there and worked there about a year and a half. And I thought, life's better than this. I told them I want to go back to college. So I went back to JC there. They improved their football. And after that season, I got 3 scholarships of different colleges for football. So my career changed in a hurry.
And what was it about Fresno State's football program that made you want to go play for Jimmy Bradshaw?
Well, they were going to go to Hawaiian Islands. Second year I was there, over on the boat. That's how I went to Fresno, and it was close to home.
So even more than a year ahead of time, Coach Bradshaw was using that Hawaii trip as a recruiting tool, huh?
Yeah. I was glad to coach under Bradshaw. He was a terrific coach, and I really liked him.
Well, and you guys had some pretty good teams there in 38 and 39, especially 39 when you guys went 9-1 that season.
That's right.
And you played with some pretty big names in Bulldog lore. The great Al Radko was on those teams, Jack Mulkey, of course.
Yep.
And a gentleman that I've never had the privilege of talking to, because he actually died during World War II serving in the Air Corps. I understand that Mel Rao was quite the athlete on that team.
Mel was very fast, a good halfback. Yes, he was. I didn't know how he died, but he was very good.
Well, he served in the Air Corps in North Africa, and it was a non-combat crash, I believe, that claimed his life. He's actually buried back there in North Africa.
Oh, me.
And, of course, when you guys were playing for the Bulldogs, you didn't know that you were all going to be sucked into this thing called World War II. I imagine it was a pretty fun and carefree existence as a college football player.
Yes, that's true. About the time I finished JC, Fresno State, they come up with this offer to join the Army, and 90 days you'd be a lieutenant. I didn't go for it, and some went for it, and some lost their lives. I was in love, and I want to spend more time with the girl I was in love with.
Well, and I think you've spent quite a bit of time with that young woman. Tell me how you met your wife.
Well, I stayed in a Christian home because I had to study, and my roommate got me a date, not with my present wife. He took my wife as a date and got me another one. But over the years, we began to get friendly, and one time, my roommate says, "Why don't you see if you can go with Marvel? We feel like a brother and sister." And Marvel and I have been seeing each other quite a bit in the hall, and it worked out real good.
And you and Marvel recently celebrated your 71st wedding anniversary?
Right.
What's your secret? I'm sure everybody wants to know.
I'll tell you, she's still capable. She can give names, dates, ages, stuff like that. It's just remarkable. And at 94, she drives, and I'll tell you, I don't know what to do without her.
Well, I guess not. That's quite a story in its own right, and I know we're going to hear quite a story about your days in the Merchant Marine, but let's talk about being a Bulldog football player a little bit, because it sounds like quite the experience. And I've heard a few Jimmy Rabbit Bradshaw stories. He had an extremely successful run as Fresno State's head coach. What was it that impressed you about his capabilities as a leader?
Well, he used more or less his plays were set up, trick plays, hidden ball plays, stuff like that. And I led the offense a lot of plays. A lot of times the guy, defense, didn't know where the ball was, and I could hit the guy from the side, and the ball would be by him. So it was a good offense. He got it from Stanford. He came from Stanford as a coach and put us in Fresno, hidden ball play.
Mm-hmm. So your first season at Fresno State, the team was 7-3.
Yeah.
And then you come back in this 1939 season. You know you're going to finish the year going to Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
And you guys won your first seven games that year. You started out 7-0. That must have been quite the ride.
Yeah, it was. And then it was all good coaching. And our players were improving. They were bringing the best they could get from J.C., Pasadena J.C., and he was bringing in the kind of players he could find. So it all helped.
Well, tell me about your role on the team. Obviously, these are the days where you played offense, defense, and anything the coach told you. So where did you find yourself the most when the games were going on?
Well, I like defense the best. Anyway, I played over the center, and I had a play like out of the center. I was going through one side instead of through the other, and I could block a punt. Sometimes I'd try to go over the center. I'd get them confused so that I had a good jump on the center, and he was able to block a few punts.
Sounds like fun to me. And I was thinking about your name, Desmond Hornbuckle, and I'm thinking if you were playing college football today, the highlight shows probably couldn't get enough of you. We'd be hearing your name all the time. Did you feel like you had a unique name amongst the landscape of college football back then?
No, I didn't.
I think it's got a pretty good ring to it. I think people would enjoy that. Tell me about some of the guys on your team that year and who you were impressed with, or maybe a moment that stands out that was the most exciting for you on that 1939 Bulldog team.
Well, it's hard to say because they're all pretty good. But Mokey was good. Ratko was good. I mean, you go right down the line. They were all outstanding. Really.
And you guys got to finish that season, and you even said this was one of the reasons you wanted to come play for then Fresno State College and Coach Jimmy Bradshaw, the trip to Hawaii where you would play your final two games that year. Fresno State had never been to Hawaii.
I never met Jimmy Bradshaw till I went to Fresno.
Yeah.
He complimented me a couple of times. He said I was one of his best players he ever coached. But I worked hard at it. Believe me, I was so glad to play under him. I gave him all I had.
So you guys are making this trip to Hawaii at the end of the year. You had started out 7-0, and then your last home game, you take on San Jose State. You suffer your first loss of the year, and then you're getting on this boat and headed to Hawaii. I mean, that must have been quite the adventure for you here in 1939.
Sure was. But we scored all the mileage and everything like that. We had a guy that Bradshaw picked up out of the East, and he clipped a player right in front of the referee, and it penalized us down to the goal line, and that's how that one team beat us.
I see. But then you still get to end the year with this trip to Hawaii. You played in front of a sold-out crowd in Honolulu, 22,000 people.
And they said if we lost, we played two games, one to professionals and one for the university. And they said if we lost, we wouldn't be asked back again. But we won both games.
Yes, you did. And the team was asked back the next year in the first Pineapple Bowl. Of course, you didn't get to go to that.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I was slow getting up. It was the last game playing Whittier. And a guy jumped, big tackle from Whittier, jumped on my ankle. And I was on crutches the next day when I was getting ready to leave for Hawaiian Islands. And of course, I couldn't go. So that's how I got lost that one. But I didn't care too much. I was getting in love with a good girl, and so I didn't feel too bad.
And that, of course, was in 1940 when the Bulldogs were there almost exactly a year before the attacks on Pearl Harbor. Now, so when you were in the Hawaiian Islands there in 1939, did it seem at all like a place that could be the center of a war before too long?
Not a bit. But the boys went over the second year, the 40s, they said, boys, you didn't miss anything. I don't know if they were trying to comfort me or what, but it wasn't the same. The year before, they gave us a parade. Got us dates, had a dance, entertained us, and I guess it wasn't that way the second year.
So I guess it was good for you. You stayed behind with your date.
Yeah, I didn't really mind.
And so if I do the math here, you and Marvel have been married 71 years.
Right.
That means you got married in 1941. What month was it?
It was, she's watching me.
Uh-oh, I got you in trouble.
May 10th. And it had to be secret because she got a teacher. I took her down. She got a teaching job at McFarland. We were still in school. And then we headed back, took off for Reno, and got married. But she had to be quiet because they wouldn't hire married teachers.
Ah, I see. So you guys were sneaking around.
That's right.
I wonder, you know, you might have a record there. For people who went to Reno to elope, you might have the longest marriage on record.
I probably do. It didn't seem like that. I say I'm so lucky that I got the wife I got. She's outstanding.
Well, the proof's in the pudding. It's hard to argue with 71 years. But the first year, the world started to change a little bit on you. I guess that would be 7 months after you got married. The Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor.
I'll tell you, my roommate got me a job down at the shipyard, and I worked there, and we bought a home, and we were moving in the day of Pearl Harbor. But I knew from then on I'd be in the service real quick. Been working in a shipyard and on ships, I was taking them out, and a crew would take them out and test them out and turn them over to the English, the Americans, and the Russians. So that's why I went into the Merchant Marine.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm really thrilled that we get to tell this story today. It's fun to have this Bulldog connection, but also the Merchant Marine is a portion of World War II that's often overlooked. At that time, it was not officially part of the military. In fact, you guys weren't considered World War II veterans officially until President Reagan, at the end of his second term, signed a bill that gave you veteran status.
They found out we lost more ships than the Navy because they were sinking us because we were carrying on gasoline. So that's true.
Now, I've got some statistics here. According to what I read, more than 3 million tons of merchant ships were lost in World War II. And mariners died at a rate of 1 in 24 people, which was a higher casualty rate than any other service. And
yeah.
if you add it all up, there were more than 700 American cargo ships that sank. And of the 215,000 men serving in the Merchant Marines, more than 8,600 of them died. So I'm glad you weren't one of those 8,600, but we need to catch our first commercial break right now. So the story of how exactly you ended up in the Merchant Marines, we'll have to wait just a moment. When we get back, more from this 95-year-old World War II veteran and one-time two-way lineman for Coach Jimmy Bradshaw's Fresno State Bulldogs. More of Hometown Heroes right after this on KMJ. That bed, I heard my wife say, in a way that I knew she was either really, really happy or really upset. Paul Leffler here for Sleep Retreat, and if it had been the latter, I wouldn't be telling you about it. No, she was excited. That bed, she said, is so comfortable. She had just gotten her first taste of our new Tempur-Pedic mattress from Sleep Retreat, Fresno's only premium bedding store. And I'm not making this up, she didn't want to move. That's how much she loves the comfort and support that Tempur-Pedic's technology delivers. This is not one mattress fits all. The trained professionals at Sleep Retreat can walk you through the whole spectrum from soft to firm. But the one thing all the Tempur-Pedics have in common is they adapt to your exact shape to support every part of your body. If you've slept on a conventional mattress your whole life, like I have, this is something you've never experienced before. Do yourself and your sleeping habits a favor by trying out the most recommended bed in America. Visit your Tempur-Pedic Comfort Center in Central California. That's Sleep Retreat on El Paso next to Fashion Furniture.
Hey, this is Paul Leffler, and if you've been listening to KMJ for any length of time, you've probably heard me wax poetic about my hometown of Los Banos at one point or another. Every city has its secrets, and I'm going to fill you in on one my old neighbors have been keeping for 40 years. No matter where you live in the valley, you probably go through Los Banos every once in a while, so next time you're cruising down the 152, pull into Ming's Restaurant. The owner, Paul Cito, has been showing off his skills in the kitchen there since 1968. He has perfected the best Mongolian beef this side of the Great Wall. Delicate rice noodles underneath tender slices of beef with a flavor I can't even put into words. Whether you prefer mild, medium, or spicy, you'll be coming back for more. Ming's is closed on Mondays, so don't say I didn't warn you. But stop in any other day and try the pork wonton soup, Chinese chicken salad, or get everyone's attention with the sizzling chicken and vegetables. The possibilities are endless, but they all have one thing in common. Ming's time-tested commitment to taking your taste buds on a thrill ride. Ming's Restaurant, 435 West Pacheco Boulevard in Los Banos.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes with a little Fresno State football connection today. Desmond Hornbuckle, who starred on the offensive and defensive lines for Coach Jimmy Bradshaw's great Fresno State squads in 1938 and 39, an injury cut his 1940 season short. We discussed some of those Bulldog days a little bit. Fresno State, of course, opens its season tonight at Bulldog Stadium at 7 o'clock against Weber State. I can't wait. Our pregame coverage on KMJ will get underway at 5 today. You may hear an occasional crackle as we connect with Mr. Hornbuckle via telephone from his home in Brea in Southern California. Bear with us with that. He is 95 years old now, married for 71 years to his wife, Marvel. So we can all marvel at that. But they'd been married less than a year when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Before long, he had joined the Merchant Marines, which history has proven to be pretty dangerous duty. Tell me the story of how you ended up in the Merchant Marines and what that was like for you.
Well, I was working in a shipyard and decided I'd better sign up for the Merchant Marine or maybe the Army would take me, but I wouldn't have any choice. I had a good job at the shipyard, taking ships out and shaking them down and turning them over to the English, Americans, and Russians. I thought I'd be a lot better in the Merchant Marine than in the Army.
And you're newly married, and
yep.
You find out before you head out on a ship that your wife's expecting also?
Well, we lost our first baby, and they got infection in hospital, little boy, and the wife is depressed. The doctor says as soon as she gets her strength back, start another one, which we did, knowing that I would be gone. So she was a brave one because she didn't know whether I'd be back or not. And the second one was a girl. Quite a story. Being in a tanker, you're in and out of port so fast, I'd try to find out whether the baby was born or what. And finally, first Australia, captain says, I want you to get this boy here a message. You find out if he's got a child at home and how it's doing. So we're leaving port again, and I thought that was just another one. They signaled out, said, call me to the bridge, and said, it's a girl, and she's doing fine. She's 3 months old. So I was quite a thing. When I got home, she was 6 months.
Wow.
When we got home, it's because we burned out some machinery and had to go back to port and get repaired.
The ship you were on, now, were you on more than one ship during your time in the Merchant Marines or just the one?
Yes, I was on about two or three others.
Mm-hmm.
I finally come out as chief engineer on the other ship, the last ship.
Well, if you can, give me I know it was a long time ago. You're 95 years old now, and you're just in your 20s back then during World War II.
Yeah.
But to be out at sea, to have that wife back home, to not know if your baby girl or baby of any kind had been born yet or not, how did you stay focused on the task at hand and trying to get through this situation?
Well, I don't know. You just have to do it. It's survival in a tanker. And I had a job that was important, pumping cargo in and out of the ship, which was gasoline. We would fuel the ships like Saratoga and several submarines and several destroyers. So it kept me pretty busy.
And I think that's one thing people don't understand. They think about the Navy and they think about these aircraft carriers and battleships and all the way down to the destroyers, the tin cans, but none of those ships would be able to operate without the supply chain being intact, and that's where you guys came in.
Yeah.
But it seems like it also would make your ships pretty vulnerable if you're loaded down with all this fuel.
Well, that's what moving into Iran. We had to go up a river. And we had to have a pilot take us up there. They could only load one ship at a time. And the subs would wait outside, let us go in empty, and they just got loaded. Well, they got the ship in front of us. They loaded the day before, and when we come in, he was waiting for us. We were just lucky that he missed with his torpedoes, and we survived that day. That whole day we fought till a plane came over, and they had us submerged, and we got away. But he stayed up all day fighting us, and I think he came up the next day because he had to charge his batteries, and I think our planes got him.
Well, and I was doing some research about that, and I found a couple of different articles online, and maybe you can tell me if this sounds like what happened to you, and then we'll get your own personal perspective of how you experienced it. But I guess this was in April of 1944 in the Indian Ocean. And later on, the War Shipping Administration, which oversaw, of course, all the Merchant Marine ships, put out this release for the Sunday morning papers. It was months later that it was actually released. But here is what they said. I'll read what I can of it and then let you set me straight here. It says, an American tanker, the Yamhill, outmaneuvered and outfought a Japanese submarine in an all-day battle that ended only when the appearance of a Navy PBY plane persuaded the Japanese sub to dive. Details of the encounter in which the tanker eluded five torpedoes and many shells from the Raiders' deck guns arrived in a report from Lieutenant John McCauley. It was 6:05 a.m. when able seaman Carmen Napa of New Jersey, lookout in the after crow's nest, electrified out of the boredom of watching the ship's wake, shouted down, "Ten fish on the port side!" The clang of general quarters sounded throughout the ship. This was the moment for which the merchant crew and Navy armed guard long had drilled. Is that what it felt like for you, that this was a moment you had been building up some tension in anticipation of?
Well, yes, you just lived with that all the time. And I was on the bow with a friend. I go up there every evening. He was on the 48 watch, and he said, "See that exhaust way over there?" He said, "I reported to bridge, and we took a different zigzag course. That's changing one, you know, one direction and another direction." So he struck in the morning and missed us. So we were just lucky.
So when that general quarters sounded at just after 6 in the morning that day, where were you, and where was your duty station that you had to report to?
I was in bed, or getting up anyway. I was on the aft end, supposed to hand ammunition to the machine gun, a 12 and 20 millimeter. But you can't use a 20 millimeter on a sub. Not only is it too far, but it wouldn't do him any good. But so I was there where I could watch it. We had the 5-inch there and watched him fire, which was interesting. And I could tell we were getting closer, and the sub pulled back later and tried to get in position. We just changed course all the time, and he ran us around the circle till the plane came over.
And but that was about 12 hours, that whole process, from when you encountered the sub to when the PBY finally came and scared him off. And these torpedoes, I don't think they missed you by too much, did they?
Well, they didn't. According to the report, the captain said, just barely missed us.
I'll read a little more of the report, and then I'll ask you some more questions. Again, this was a report from 1944 about this encounter of the merchant marine ship, the Yamhill, that Mr. Hornbuckle was on, and a Japanese submarine intent on sinking that ship and all the important fuel that it was carrying. It said 80 merchant seamen and Navy gunners were at their stations and ready for action in less than 3 minutes. That was quick.
Yeah.
And as they assembled, the white wake of the torpedo showed the missile was missing the tank's stern by less than 5 feet. Four more torpedoes came at the ship in quick succession, and they all missed. Did you see those torpedoes and those wakes?
No, I didn't. I didn't hear any of that because that came from the captain, who was up in the bridge to see it. I was on the aft end, and I just didn't get to see any of that.
Well, maybe it's a good thing, because it probably would have taken your breath away, huh?
Sure would have.
Well, I'll continue this. It says, as the last torpedo went past, the ship's company stood by tense and strained. The gun crew had their big gun and their 20 millimeters loaded and ready for action. Merchant seamen were manning the ammunition trade and loading the machine guns. And under Captain Shin's orders, the quartermaster had the ship bucking through the choppy sea on a variable zigzag. And that's what you described, the zigzag, to try to make it a moving target and have those torpedoes miss.
Yeah.
How rocky of a ride was that? Is it to the point that it's hard to keep your feet?
No. Not when you're carrying that much gasoline. I never rocked that much. When you get that much gasoline, you can almost dangle your hand in the water. You're so deep.
You're weighed down so much, which really presents a bigger target for the torpedoes, because that ship is sitting deeper in the water than it would be if it were empty.
That's true.
And I imagine you can't help but think about all that fuel and think about what might happen if a torpedo ignites it.
That's right. If a torpedo hits it and that gas is spread all over, talking to the guys who were in that ship, I thought I could swim underneath and get a breath, but gasoline spreads too fast and burns too hot. You just can't do it.
So if one of those torpedoes that all were very near misses, if just one of those had connected, there's a good chance that you never would have made it home to meet your daughter. or see your wife Marvel.
Wow.
Well, let's see what else this says here about this in this 12-hour encounter with the Japanese submarine. The description continues. Suddenly, the big black conning tower was seen rising from the water on the starboard side, and before the tanker could get out of range, Japanese sailors were at the deck guns. Two shells whizzed between the Yamhill's masts to explode 25 yards beyond the port side. An answering shell from the tanker was aimed a trifle low, and it hit the water, ricocheting over the submarine. Then the armed guard bracketed the sub with a second shell beyond her, and the Japanese submarine submerged. For the next shot, between those brackets, would have exploded on the target. Were you catching any of that?
No, I wasn't. When I got up on deck, I was on the back end, and I didn't see a lot of that. No.
Were you feeling the chaos of that situation, though?
Oh, I felt the anxious. I know we were in extreme danger during gasoline. All they had to do is hit us with a shell, and we would have exploded.
Absolutely. And you'd been with this ship for a while, probably formed some relationships with some of the other guys aboard ship?
Yes, because I was older. The Navy put on some gym equipment, and I formed the gym in one of the forward hatches. It wasn't being used. So we had some gym to work with the guys. And then I worked right in the bakery. I helped the cook sometime baking cakes because they went to baking school for 6 weeks. There's a lot you don't know about baking, so I could help there. So I was pretty busy.
I guess so. And you mentioned being one of the older guys. You would have been all of, about 27 years old?
I think that's close.
And the rest of the guys aboard, I'm sure you had a few teenagers.
You bet.
Did they have a nickname for you?
No. Not to my face, they didn't.
Let me read the rest of this play-by-play here, if you will. Let's see. They say the Yamhill thought it had seen the last of the sub, but half an hour later, smoke was seen 5 miles away that was judged to be coming from diesel engines. Then the sub began to move on a course that would be out of the merchantman's effective range. The big gun on the tanker's bow spoke at its farthest range, and the shell fell 25 yards short. But the two shells that answered from the sub fell 200 yards short of the tanker. And I love this quote inside the official report. They have a quote from Ensign Selinsky, who was observing, and he said, "We've got a longer left jab than she has, anyhow." So to him, it was a big boxing match at sea. The sub had greater speed, however, and for almost 12 hours, the Japanese continuously maneuvered without getting within range of the Yamhill's big gun. Shot after shot was exchanged as the deadly game of tag went on, the tanker firing more than 30 shells from its big gun, and the Japanese twice that number. Many shots had landed near the tanker when the perspiring crew and gunners heard the hum of motors. A Navy PBY was coming out of the sun in response to the distress signal earlier flashed by the radio operator. The submarine ceased maneuvering and submerged. The day-long battle was over.
The one thing that when the captain said full speed ahead, the engine crew turned on the feed pump. But they never turned the circulating oil on the bearings, and it burned out the pump. So instead of going our 19 miles an hour, we're down to at least 12, where the sub had his speed still steady. So that made us in worse jeopardy.
Yeah, you couldn't escape.
That's right. So when they said we outsmarted the Japanese, there wasn't a place on the ship that didn't make a mistake.
So when you hear outsmarted, you think more that you were fortunate?
That's right. My prayer was answered.
Well, and you make that comment, and some guys say that in a lighthearted fashion, but I'm thinking if you have a wife and a baby you've never met before back at home, that you probably did say a prayer or two during those 12 hours.
That's true. So that's the only defense I had.
What do you think was the most difficult thing about those 12 hours? Was there a moment that you think was harder for you than others, or an idea that got to you the most?
Well, I really didn't see how we could get away unless the plane came over, and a plane didn't come over till almost dusk. And they didn't have jets in those days, and it just came on just before dark, and it had to submerge. So we made it, got away. So there wasn't anybody was can brag that he saved the day, except that pilot.
Well, and that was my next question. I imagine that left you with a real fondness for PBYs. I bet when you see one of those planes, it brings back a good memory for you.
Well, yes, but they weren't a jet. It was just they didn't have jets then, and it looked like an old-fashioned plane with a propeller and wings and stuff like that, and it took them a long time to get there to save us. I was glad to see them, believe me.
And I think a lot of times, and I've interviewed some PBY pilots, that, of course, is the big flying boat, and a lot of their duties were going to rescue people who had been shot down or stranded. And I imagine from their perspective, just flying in, not damaging an enemy sub or blowing anything up, it might not seem that exciting to them. But by them scaring that submarine off, I imagine you and the guys aboard your ship probably felt like they saved your life.
They sure did. They sure did. That's the only way you can say it.
Well, I am so thankful that that's the way it all worked out, and I think your family is too. Break time again, but when we come back, the rest of Desmond Hornbuckle's story, and a heads up on a couple events honoring history and veterans in the Valley in the course of the next week. You're listening to Hometown Heroes on KMJ. A high school where 98% of graduating seniors go to college, where success on the SAT and advanced placement or AP classes outpaces almost every other school in the Valley. Home to a student newspaper that hauls in national awards on an annual basis. Its sports teams capture section championships. Have you figured it out yet? The school is Fresno Christian, and it's not just a high school. Fresno Christian offers a complete K-12 curriculum delivered by supremely qualified, experienced teachers who connect with their students personally, intellectually, and spiritually. Go to FresnoChristian.com to learn more about the value of a truly Christ-centered education. And if you want to see for yourself, call 299-1695 to schedule a campus visit. Whether it's kindergarten, high school, or anywhere in between, you'll get a genuine feel for what Fresno Christian's commitment to excellence could mean for your student. That number again, 559-299-1695. Fresno Christian Schools, education with a higher purpose. For years, Paso Robles has been known for the Mid-State Fair and its world-class wineries. Coming Saturday, September 29th, a new event will join those two. Estrella Warbird Museum, in conjunction with the Plains of Fame Air Museum, presents Warbirds Over Paso. Thrill to the roar of P-51 Mustangs, a P-38 Lightning, F-4U Corsair, and even a North American B-25 bomber. Tour the C-47, a true veteran of World War II, and see many more in breathtaking flybys. See the world's only N-9M flying wing, forerunner of the B-2 stealth bomber. Warbird rides available before and after the flying display. Gates open 8 a.m. Admission $20. Active duty military and kids under 12 free. Admission includes open house at the museum, free parking, food and beverage vendors on site. Sponsored in part by Firestone Walker Brewing Company, it's Warbirds Over Paso, Saturday, September 29th at the Paso Robles Municipal Airport on Airport Road off Highway 46. Call 805-277-0440 or go to ewarbirds.org/airshow.
This is Hometown Heroes, honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. It's been a real treat today to journey back in time with Desmond Hornbuckle, 95 years old and more than 70 years removed from his days as a Fresno State lineman. The Bulldogs kick off their 91st season of football tonight at 7 against Weber State. Our KMJ coverage begins at 5 with Bulldogs Live. Before we get back to Mr. Hornbuckle's adventures with the Merchant Marines during World War II, I want to pass on some info on events coming up this week that I think you're going to be interested in. Tomorrow, Sunday, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Castle Air Museum in Atwater, it's Open Cockpit Day. How much fun is that? On this program, we often hear stories about B-17s, B-24s, B-29s, you name it. So many of those historic planes are on display at Castle Air Museum, and more than 30 of them are going to be open tomorrow, so you can actually climb inside that cockpit and experience what it was like for those brave airmen in World War II. More modern planes also are on display there, like the SR-71 Blackbird. They're going to have helicopter rides available, model airplane making for kids, bounce houses too, and plenty of great food. Even homemade ice cream, I understand. So maybe if you're driving down for the Bulldog game tonight, heading back up that way tomorrow, stop off in Atwater for Open Cockpit Day at Castle Air Museum. Maybe it's something fun for your family to do after church tomorrow. It runs 9 to 5, and Castle Air Museum is at 5050 Santa Fe Drive, just off the 99 in Atwater. 1 week from today is going to be a special day in Clovis. I'll be up in Oregon to call the Bulldogs against the Ducks for you here on KMJ. But if you're around the valley and you want to honor some veterans who need to know how much you appreciate them, get out to Clovis by 9 a.m. for the Welcome Home Parade for local veterans of Iraq, Afghanistan, and yes, even Vietnam. Give all those men and women the welcome home they deserve and let them know how much we all appreciate their service and sacrifice. The Welcome Home Parade will begin and end at the Clovis Veterans Memorial District building at 5th and Hughes in Clovis. That's a special place, isn't it? Stick around after the parade for the Job and Resource Fair from 10 to 2. They're going to have food there also. That all happens next Saturday, September 8th. And the next day, Sunday the 9th at 2 p.m., one of my favorite bands, The Sounds of Freedom, will be performing there at the Clovis Veterans Memorial Building. If you like patriotic music, military music, American music, take your family out there and enjoy. That's Sunday the 9th, 2 p.m. at the Clovis Veterans Memorial District. Okay, I thought it was important for you to know about some of those events that I'm guessing are right up your alley. Let's get back to Mr. Hornbuckle now. He told us about that tense 12-hour showdown with a Japanese submarine as he served on the merchant ship Yamhill. They survived that encounter in 1944, made it to their destination in Australia, and then you unexpectedly got to come back home to America. Why was that?
Because we had repairs that had to be done in the States. They burned out some other machinery. So I got to see my daughter a little earlier.
And what was that like to get back home, to see your wife again, and meet this little girl for the first time?
That's when I thought I arrived in heaven, really. How nice it is, be on solid ground.
And was that it for you, or did you have to go back out on some more ships before the end of the war?
I had to go out on some more ships.
Did that encounter with the Japanese sub in April of 44, did that change your perspective or your outlook going back on future journeys?
Well, I sent for my engineer's license and was an engineer on the first, and it changed. I took a ship that had a little more safer course.
And how many children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren do you have now?
Oh, I got one son left, and he's got a couple. No, he's got four grandchildren.
You ever think about that day on the Yamhill with that Japanese sub trying to put you down at the bottom of the sea and think about the people in your family who never would have been born if you didn't make it back?
Oh, I have, yes. I've read several articles come from the government, and I've always thought how lucky I was. That's all I can do, just be thankful.
And I imagine you were thankful or at least relieved when World War II came to an end. What do you remember about that?
I was thankful it was over with. And I can get home and run a life, a normal life. We were sure glad.
We're talking from 1945 to now 2012. That's 67 years, a long time.
Yeah.
And you did get to have this life that for 12 hours in the Indian Ocean you weren't sure you were going to get. But give us a little nutshell glimpse of what you've been up to the last 67 years.
Well, I went and helped the folks in the bakery for a while. They wanted to retire. Then I went into the manufacturing business, and I tell people, you can see my mistakes going down the road. See these units that are hauling 5 and 6 cars? I built a number of those. I bought a business house. It was supposed to be financed by an outfit, and it wasn't. And the last customer I had was a $500,000 customer making auto transports for General Motors.
How about that?
But I was ready to quit.
And you've been in Southern California for quite some time now?
Yes, that's right, in Brea.
Was it meaningful to you in 1988 when President Reagan said, you know what, merchant marines are World War II veterans too?
Well, that meant a lot because then they accepted me in the American Legion. And you're right, we lost more men in the merchant marine than the Navy did in more ships. That's why.
And for those more than 40 years where you weren't recognized as veterans of...
You're considered draft evaders.
And that, I'm assuming that bothered you a little bit.
Well, I didn't go to American Legion meetings or anything, but I didn't think too much of it. I just thought I was lucky to get out of it.
When you look back on that time in our nation's history, it's been a long time.
Yes, it has.
What do you think is important for us to remember now?
Well, it's hard to say. I don't like wars, and it seems like we're always getting tangled in something. And I read how many men we lose over there in Afghanistan and different ones, and no reason. If my son, I'd feel awful bad.
Mm-hmm. What would you say you're most proud of, most thankful for?
I got through and was ready to spend the rest of my life with my wife.
Mm-hmm. And you're not done yet.
No, that's not.
What does it mean to you to have been a Fresno State football player? Do you follow the team now? Is that a source of pride for you?
Yes, I follow in the paper. And every once in a while, somebody asks about it. But I'm proud I played. Fresno State, I was one of the best players he'd ever coached, and that was quite a thrill. I'm proud that I played under him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us about it, and thank you for making all the Bulldogs proud.
Well, thanks for calling.
And Marvel, sure she doesn't want to say anything?
No, she's a very modest person. She was only child. And an honor student and a Christian, but I married her anyway.
Do you have any good Al Radka stories?
No, but it was a pleasure serving with him. I was at a meeting of the players just before he died, and I felt sorry that I didn't say that I was glad he was on the team. And he played the other guard. He just was a natural comedian.
What kind of helmets did you wear?
Well, they're a lot different. They're not as nice as they are now. They were leather, no screen on the front.
Yeah, you probably would have had more protection if you were a pilot in the Army Air Corps or something.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, apparently those leather helmets were tough enough because you're still ticking, and I think our audience can tell you still have your wits about you. Al Radka was obviously sharp enough to take his creativity to the airwaves as a television pioneer here in the Central Valley. I know so many of you remember Al, who played football right next to Mr. Hornbuckle at Fresno State. Many other members of those Bulldog teams you played on made a lasting impact here in Central California. Hopefully, Fresno State can have a 2012 season in the vein of that 1939 squad that went 9-1. Desmond Hornbuckle, 95 years old, one of the oldest living Bulldog football players. He and his wife, Marvel, met at Fresno State, and they're still married more than 71 years later. That gives the rest of us something to shoot for, don't you think? Don't forget about Open Cockpit Day tomorrow at Castle Air Museum, the Veterans Welcome Home Parade next Saturday in Clovis at 9 a.m. You can find all that information, by the way, on the Hometown Heroes blog at kmjnow.com. Thanks so much for spending your Saturday with us, and join us again next Saturday for another edition of Hometown Heroes on KMJ.